This is Gorse Culture Podcast, the HR detective agency where we solve one piece of the people puzzle at a time. Helping you crack the HR code, here's Joe Gorse.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Detective Agency. My name is Jo and today's episode is a little bit different. This is the 15th episode that I've recorded and the final episode of season one. I really can't believe that exactly 3 months ago we launched episode one with the amazing Eleanor Wilde to answer the people puzzle on wellbeing. Eleanor was just a fabulous guest and she remains the most popular episode of the season. I was passionate to start this podcast to provide a space to answer those people puzzles and support individuals. So I'm part of many HR and business forums on LinkedIn and on Facebook, as well as local networks too. And I've seen loads of people, whether they're standalone HR professionals or business leaders, ask a HR question to the forums that they need help with. Now, everyone is always so willing to support with advice and signposting. But one of the things that I noticed, what that's just like in the business world, there's a vast array of HR professionals and business leaders who either advocate a personnel approach of command and control or a human-centric approach of looking holistically with the employee at the forefront of any issue. And of course, everyone in between who has a different balance of beliefs within their HR careers. And with that, every question that somebody asked, they would quite often get very different solutions and advice. And I often thought about that person who'd asked the original question and wondered what they thought of that huge, vast difference in some of those answers and solutions. Now, many HR professionals fall into HR and have their own caseload of HR horror stories. In episode 9, James Teal joined me to share some of those Halloween horror stories with you.
Was face stabbing on the essential criteria?
My own journey into HR was following an accident at work. The HR manager had an office manager role previously and she really wanted to make a difference. Unfortunately, the company either wouldn't or they couldn't invest in her development. She was really passionate about being there for people and was really accessible to managers. What didn't help in my case was the lack of knowledge that she had around fit notes, occupational health advice and reasonable adjustments. But on the other side of the coin of that experience, this resulted in me researching and talking to professionals so that I was more informed in supporting the conversations that I would have with her. In the end, I resigned and I took a path that has led me to this point. The reason I'm telling you this is that these podcasts are for that HR manager. These podcasts are a resource to support her decision making. And I've loved every minute of recording these podcasts and speaking to all the amazing individuals that I've spoken to over these past 3 months. Now, over the past 3 months of this first season, we've been on a journey together, you and I, to support business leaders and HR professionals, line managers, and even individuals to solve their people puzzles. Now, when I've been reflecting on all of these episodes, it's led me to think a little bit differently about the employee life cycle. Now, as I say, I'm a HR professional, but I like to focus very closely on culture and transformational change. Before my journey into HR, I didn't really know anything about the employee life cycle, but it's a term that every HR professional knows. And each one probably thinks a little bit differently about what should and shouldn't be included. There are so many models out there that it's really difficult to know what's right for your business. So in preparation for this today, I had a quick look online and I was so surprised at how many employee life cycle models there were. I saw several with 5 stages. I saw one with 6 stages, one with 7 stages, and 8 stages, and even an 11-stage employee life cycle. Most of the life cycle models have some of the same content, so attraction, onboarding, development, and exit. Some of them have added recruitment and engagement, but removed development. And then others have added recognition and alumni. But what they all have is retention. Now, I mentioned this one because retention is something that I struggle with. I'm going to be honest with you, I've never really understood why retention is part of the employee life cycle. It's almost as if once you've got them, you've got to fight to keep them or manage out the ones that you don't want to keep. the underperformers. In episode 2, creating a fair and transparent reward system with Ramiz Kaleem, he talked about enabling excellence.
We don't even like the term performance management, so we call it enabling excellence, because it's about enabling our employees to achieve excellence rather than saying we want to manage poor performance.
I really love this term and this approach, which removes the need for generalized appraisals or performance management within his company through our strategy. I was a guest on one of his reflection podcasts recently, where he also shared that his company doesn't even have probationary periods. Hurrah! And before an organisation can even begin to look at their employee life cycle, they need to get their core purposes set first, because this is their why. This is what their employees are going to buy into. Simon Sinek once gave a talk to the managers at Coca-Cola. He broke the news to them that their staff had never had a lifelong dream to work for a sugary drinks company, that they were an engaged workforce because they shared in the purpose of the organisation. They believed in the journey they were on together. Now that's purpose, and that's what organisations need to share with the world to attract talent. Instead of having retention as a part of the employee life cycle, I'd suggest that it's actually an outcome of a people-first mindset and a positive organisational culture. By focusing on an environment where employees feel valued, engaged, and supported, organisations can significantly enhance their ability to retain talent through the life cycle. What organisations also need to look at before they even think of the employee life cycle is how they're going to create the right psychologically safe environment for their employees to flourish. Integrating a psychologically safe environment involves various components such as communication, environment, tools, social responsibility, and pay, reward, and recognition. These are basic requirements that every organisation needs to provide. They're not really part of the employee life cycle. They're part of every day. Not all organisations will be in the right place to make any fundamental changes and may need to first look at the culture of their organisation and if it fits with the business goals. Culture change programmes can often be overwhelming, but sometimes it's about looking at the big picture a little differently. In episode 12, Thinking Effectiveness, The Secret of Change, Andy said,
transition is the mental adjustment. So if you can mentally adjust, you will think differently. When you think differently, you act differently. When you act differently, you get different results.
Cultural change needs to have the buy-in of the entire organisation. In episode 8, Creating a Cracking Culture, Claire said,
got that buy-in from that group of culture champions. And because they were bought in from the very beginning and they were involved, they were able to help us communicate the why and also the progress of the overall journey across the organisation with their peers. And it came across as much more natural and organic than just relying on kind of corporate communications that tend to feel a bit more one way.
Pointing a real mix of culture champions, we were able to spread the culture organically. If we then look at the employee lifecycle model, like many others, I'd start with attraction. Because if you get your core right, you're already on your way to attracting talent. And all you have to do then is to tell everyone who you are. In episode 11, Incorporating Transparency into Business with Adam Horn,
we've looked at the world of employer branding and how it's changed and grown over the last few years, and it's become a battle of businesses selling the dream.
Adam talked about how the transparency movement is not about manufactured values of transparency, but of the philosophy of the organisation. This links really nicely with the purpose of the organisation and how all the moving parts within it work together to the end goal. Next on my employee lifecycle model is recruitment and selection. In episode 5, Human-Centered Recruitment to Solve Retention, Glenn said,
if you're leading from a point of active listening, empathy and inclusion, you're doing it for the right reasons.
I love this. I actually love the way that Glenn and his company, never mind the job spec, attracts talent for organisations. They are outside the norm. They're looking for the shared purpose and values between organisations and candidates. They're not looking at getting high numbers of CVs in front of hiring managers. They're looking at getting the right people in front of hiring managers. Isn't that a great step forward? When you've selected the right people for the right role, you need to really focus on the next life cycle section, which is onboarding. I think that onboarding is really underrated in many organisations and becomes a tick box of contract and paperwork, mandatory training, building and department orientation, if you're lucky, and possibly a bit of shadowing your new colleagues to learn about how we do things around here. In episode 10, Growing Your HR Talent, James said,
spending time with different parts of the business is important. I always think when people come through HR graduate, you know, a degree and you go through a graduate program, if the graduate program's got rotations in it, where you're going and working with different departments and you're working with different people, that's where it really has benefit, because you get to see how the component parts function as a whole. And I would always recommend to a HR person that they go just into different departments and ask the question, how can we help you do better?
Again, this links through to purpose and the organisation's goals. Having an understanding of how the departments work and interlink can really support people to help them to navigate in their role and to add value. I don't really think that onboarding should stop there. Some people are really adept at getting to grips with their jobs and how they fit into the company and hit the ground running. Others may take a little bit longer to find their place and to start to flourish. Is it the employee's responsibility or the employer's? Well, to be fair, probably both. But what can organisations do to support the new employees? How long should they take to onboard? Looking at the dreaded probationary period, some organisations welcome their new employees with a thank goodness you're here, but just so you know, you're on a probation for 6 months with a 1 week notice period. And that really says it all, doesn't it? Don't focus on anything else except excelling at your job. Prove yourself or you're out. Now, how can an employee really get to understand the organisation and their role in it with that hanging over their heads? It's far too punitive to be effective and only benefits the employer with a short notice period. Not really putting your people first or enabling excellence there. There is one element of the employee life cycle that isn't on any of the examples that I've seen, but I think it's vitally important to the health of a company and its employees. Well-being is at the core of a flourishing workplace. It's not just about physical health, but also mental and emotional wellness. So creating a positive and supportive workplace that fosters wellness will lead to increased productivity and satisfaction. In many organisations, absence is one of the biggest issues that affects the business operations, but all organisations do is put processes in place to manage the sickness. In episode 4, supporting staff attendance with the right mindset, Sharon said,
we don't know what benefits are available to the organisation. Do they have things like ill health, retirement, that have they been explored and excluded before you even consider a dismissal?
This is such an important point. Let's go even further and look at how we can prevent high levels of sickness in the workplace and support the health and wellness of employees. In episode 1, Wellbeing on a Limited Budget, Eleanor said,
I also think there's a lot about just putting it on your agenda, you know, talking about it and actually openly and obviously supporting it. I think the work that I did recently on the disability policy was really eye-opening, because actually that inclusion side of things just really goes hand in hand with well-being. So we actually developed quite a trailblazing policy, and it was a little bit of a controversial one at the time, because what we've done is we've allowed people to take disability leave, and it's reduced sickness overall.
Just wow. If this wasn't in place, then those employees with underlying health conditions would have a higher level of sickness. Wellbeing is also looking at how we can support on a wider scale. Offering flexibility is an absolute must. In episode 7, Outsourcing HR to Focus on Growth, Beth said,
the second question is, where is it based? And hybrid working these days is a God-given right. It is not a perk. If you're going to tell me, unless it's a job that has got to be done in a factory somewhere, building widgets, doing face-to-face service, I get that. But if this is a job that worked remotely during lockdown, you're going to have to have a really good reason now that it doesn't.
She's absolutely right. For some roles, it can be full-time remote. For others, it's more hybrid, and others still need to work full-time on site. But the fundamental issue here is what's right for the individual to be able to fully engage and flourish in their role. Wellbeing also goes further into maternity, adoption, and even fertility. Some companies just direct these policies and processes right towards women. They're women issues. In episode 6, Fertility Inclusion in the Workplace with Claire Ingall, she said,
"We've been in articles, been in news, national newspapers. There's a lot of noise about it. Sadly, it's still labelled as a women's health issue, which really gets my goat." And if Natalie and Becky listen to this, they'll be nodding away because they know that's my thing, that I'm like, it drives me mad, drives me absolutely mad. This is a people issue. This is a human issue.
Understanding this point will go such a long way to making a difference for people who need support from their employers. In episode 13, Debunking the Myths of Maternal Mental Health, Lucy talked about her passion, absolute passion she has for supporting maternal mental health in the workplace and beyond. And she's even putting together a programme to help organisations to support their employees. She said,
"She's working down in Bristol and there's a group of corporates down there and they're actually running like classes to help get women back into the workforce. And rather than trying to just do flexible things, they're trying to create roles around those women to try and get them back in." It's just amazing, isn't it? Because you get the benefit of having these amazing women, yeah, but you bring these amazing talents back into your workforce.
Let's do this. Let's add well-being to the employee life cycle. Another well-used section of the employee life cycle is engagement. This is such a vital part of the life cycle, but so often misused or underrated or not really understood at all. I've worked in corporate and the public sector and have taken part in so many engagement activities. The starting point is to listen. Actively listening to what people are saying. But then what? How are you listening? Staff surveys, feedback sessions, team building, newsletters. There aren't many staff surveys that get a high percentage of uptake from staff because there's nothing in it from them and they never get anything back. So the only people who really take part are the people who have something negative to say. And then what? Well, that is until 3 to 6 months later when the staff survey results come out and the organisation say, "Thank you, you said this. We've listened to you and this is what we're going to do." And then it's time for another survey. Staff surveys are really a great source of data, but you have to ask the right questions. And if you engage enough of the organisation to support building a comprehensive picture of what's actually going on. But the only way you're going to do that is by letting the staff know what's in it for them. And I don't mean giving away merchandise. I've recently been talking to the CEO of a company called Shape Global, who have created a scientifically proven system that provides return on investment on employee experience, not only to the organisation, but to the employee as well. I'll be talking to Ali in season 2. Now, this really is engagement. Enabling high performance or enabling excellence, thanks from ease, is how we get those new starters to flourish in the organisation. Equipping them with the right tools and the right training to excel in their roles. Holding them accountable to unreachable expectations or high KPIs will have a negative effect. Managers have such an important role here. In episode 3, The Building Blocks of Psychological Safety, Jo said,
"I mean, I think linking our, you know, the outcomes of your program, wellbeing program, as it were, with the wider outcomes of the organization, the KPIs of the organization, I think is really, and that's part of that kind of evaluation cycle.
When organizations focus on their current leaders and those who wish to be leaders in the future, they will make it their business to then create a flourishing environment to enable their team to excel. Next on my employee lifecycle is development. I would absolutely keep this because as organizations adapt to the changing environment or grow and expand, they need to support their talent to develop with them. Lots of organisations, especially in the corporate and public sector, have development programmes to support continuous learning through training, mentorship, and also give access to lots of free resources. But the theme that's been coming out of the past 14 episodes is that one size does not fit all. Not all employees are the same. Not all employees want the same thing. And not all employees even need the same thing. Let's get the threads going through this employee life cycle and enable managers and leaders to support their individual team members to design a personal career pathway and provide opportunities for skill enhancement, career growth, and leadership development. Offboarding is often used as an element. However, one of my colleagues once termed this to me as leaving well, which absolutely said it all, really. Her aim was for the employee who was leaving to have the best experience they could have without having any anxiety or upset or anything going wrong. In episode 14, A Journey to Becoming a Top Employer, Abby said,
"It's important to share these things through your employee journey, through your employee successes, through working with your advocates to let people know, you know, what makes you unique as a company."
Making sure that the paperwork and process for leaving is one thing that can be streamlined, but support the individual too. So Richard Branson once said, "Develop them enough so that they can leave. Treat them well enough so that they stay." Now, not everyone will be retained. There will always be a natural turnover. Remember that these leavers are your advocates, and someday you may also want them to come back. Which leads me nicely onto my last section of the employee lifecycle, alumni. Now, establish an alumni network and maintain connections with former employees. You can leverage this network for potential rehires, referrals, and as a resource for industry insights. Showcase those success stories of alumni to strengthen your employer brand, which really nicely takes us back to the start of the employee life cycle. For me, the life cycle is a continuous journey. It's not a beginning and an end. My employee life cycle includes attraction, recruitment and selection, onboarding, well-being, engagement, enabling high performance, career pathway, leaving well, and alumni. I think I'm going to call this Guiding Star Employee Lifecycle. I want to thank you so much for joining me to review season one and talk a little bit about the employee lifecycle and my thoughts on this. I would really love to know some of your thoughts on the episodes of season one, and I would love to know your thoughts on the Guiding Star Employee Lifecycle. So until next time, my fellow HR detectives, keep solving those people puzzles.
That was Gorse Culture Podcast. If you find the conversation interesting, please follow or subscribe on your podcast app. For show notes, resources, and to see more about the contributors, visit gorseculturepod.com. That's gorseculturepod.com.